Hi, this is Utah Phillips, the Golden Voice of the Great Southwest, and once again, you are listening to Loafer's Glory, the hobo jungle of the mind. America. It is the place of the mile-long freights with their strong, solid, clanking, heavy loneliness at night, and of the silent freight of cars that curve away among raw, piney desolations with their promise of new lands and unknown distances. The huge, attentive gape of emptiness. It is the place where the bums come singly from the woods at sunset, the huge stillness of the water tower, the fading light, the rails, secret and alive, and trembling with the oncoming train. It is the place of the great tramps, Oklahoma Red, Fargo Pete, and the Jersey Dutchman, who grab fast rattlers for the western shore. It is the place of the old blown bums, who come up in October skirls of dust and wind and crumpled newspapers and beg with canned heat on their breaths. Help old McGuire. McGuire's a good guy, kid. You're not so tough, kid. McGuire's your pal, kid. How about McGuire? McGuire. Well, here we are again. You Utah Phillips in the studio with Steve, who's twisting the dials and turning the knobs. Those were the Borisdorfs, of course, that did that wonderful theme music. And the piece I open with is from Thomas Wolfe, a very long piece called America that just about covers it all. We're here in the studios of our community station, KVMR, the voice of several people. Here in Nevada City, where it takes three frogs to stay alive and two of them got to be doctors. You figure it out. The weather has turned. The first big rains have come. The leaves are down. There's mud everywhere. It's a time that your tramp soul feels like moving south. Go south in the winter, go north in the summer. And this kind of weather makes me think about the trains, makes me think about the old life. Remember my first trip across the Great Divide? That's the hump, they call it in tramp parlance. It was up there at Glacier National Park. I went over there with Railroad Dick Garvey. Well, I was green as corn. Your first trip across the Great Divide is a singular experience for a young tramp. It is filled with massive libation. The ritual is, when you know you've topped the divide up by Glacier, you lurch to the boxcar door, grab the jam firmly in one hand, and you siphon your lily on the breeze. But then you can spend the rest of your mortal existence visualizing your own natural bodily fluids as one half drained down through the Platte River to the Mississippi and into the Gulf of Mexico, and the other picking up the small rivulets, the tiny spring runoff that form the mighty rivers to thunder down to the Pacific and the far Spice Islands beyond. Yes, it's a cosmic experience. Jim Ringer passed away, old friend of mine. We rode freight trains out of Portland, on our way to the IWW convention in Chicago. That's 25 years ago. That was a reenactment of what's called the Overalls Brigade. Jim was a good friend, like a brother. We did a little show in a coffee house before that, right before that we went into the railroad yard. Well, it was recorded, I found out later, years later, recorded by John Ross, now living in Seattle. Well, John very kindly sent me a tape of that old show, and now let's listen to Jim Ringer singing Railroading on the Great Divide.
Here's one if you don't know, you'll learn right away. Railroading on
Well, there's my old friend Jim Ringer, and boy, don't I miss him, especially. A great traveling companion, great travel, a very mild soul. You know, Jim, a rough house from Fresno who'd worked heavy equipment for years, told me we in that boxcar, and he told me once, very quietly, he said, you know, I was never in a fight. And he gave everybody the exact opposite impression. He was a very peaceful human being. Well, there I sit on my front porch. It's about noon, my rising time. I'm sitting there with something potable playing on my guitar. Most everybody else in my neighborhood has picked up their lunch buckets and gone off down to wherever it is that they work. Well, one of my neighbors, retired banker fella, is rightfully incensed by my sloth and indolence. He's been known to catapult his rotundity across the road and stand there and publicly berate me for aforesaid sloth and indolence. He asks a question, why don't you get a job? Now, me being hip to the Socratic method fires back a question. I say, why? And he said, well, if you had a job, you could make $3, $4, or $5 an hour. I said, why, pursuing the same tack? He said, well, young fella, you make $3, $4, or $5 an hour. You could save up some of that money in the bank. I said, why? He said, oh, young fella, you save up enough of that money, pretty soon you'll never have to work another day in your life. I said, hell, that's what I'm doing right now. Those are the kind of stories that go around a jungle fire, like up at Loafer's Glory back when the Western Pacific howled through. You entertained each other by telling songs, telling stories, talking about monikers that had passed on, that had gone west, you see. There's hardly any way to capture what that fire sounds like. There's only one person I can think of who comes anywhere near. A fellow from, an old man from Plymouth, New Hampshire, by the name of Fran DiLorenzo. Knows every tramp story and poem that I ever heard of, but he's got that razor voice, that old razor voice that you delight in hearing when it comes up at night and the fire's roaring and the coffee is steaming. Fran DiLorenzo.
The hobo built the right-of-way that reaches from coast to coast, over which the fast trains run, of which we proudly boast. But the hobo does not ride the train when he wishes to take a trip. He hits the ties between the rails and carries his blanket and grip. Although he built the right-of-way over which trains go and come, he is slated in the book of life as just a common bum. Driven about from place to place with no bed on which to lay, only the leaves in the jungle along the right-of-way. The engine shrieks a loud shrill blast as it passes the hobo by. The head shack gives him a leering grin as he trudges tie on tie. Never thinking the hobo clan were the ones who blazed the way. Over the plains and through the hills, they made the right of way.
I've been on the bum early and late, Norfolk, Virginia to the Golden Gate. On a quit wandering. If you wanna ride easy, but not very fast, get a rubber-tired buggy and a pacing jackass. And it seems like I never on a quit wandering. Happy was the foreman, brother drives a hack. Baby takes up tickets while sister balls the jack. And it seems like I never gonna quit wandering. June bug come in April, piping bug in May. Bed bug come at midnight. It's a break a day, and it seems like I ain't never gonna quit wandering. Sitting in the jailhouse, my feet to the wall, ill-headed woman was the cause of it all, and it seems never gonna quit wondering. Ashes, dust to dust. If it weren't for my vest, my belly would bust. And it seems like I'm never gonna quit wondering. Honey, tell me how long before we eat. Got a coast to break bottom and fall barren feet. And it seems like I ain't never gonna quit wondering. Walking down the right away, I've been the stem. All I got to show for it is a muscle in my limb. And it seems like I ain't never gonna quit wondering.
My first tramps were in Dayton, Ohio. My father was stationed there during the Second World War in the Army Air Corps. Of course, those days, toward the end of the war, President Truman nationalized the railroad. That meant that the yard bulls were gone and the National Guard was in the yards, and the yards got hot. That's when the old tramps settled out. The age of the great tramps in this country was from the American Railway Union strike, 1893, the Pullman strike, Eugene Debs. And that's when so many were blacklisted that all they could do was get on the freight trains and ride. Up to when Truman nationalized the railroad. That's the age of the great tramps. The old ones settled out and built little shanties out of railroad ties along the aprons, along the Nickel Plate Railroad there in Dayton. We would sneak food from the Victory Gardens, kohlrabi and Swiss chard, and other snore food I couldn't stand, and trade it to the tramps for songs and stories and poems and little boxes that they had shipped out of crate boxwood with neat little drawers in them. I first learned this poem from a tramp named Beard down there when I was 12 years old. In the Dodge City yards of the Santa Fe stood a freight man up for the east. The engineer with his oil and waste was grooming the great iron beast. 10 cars back in the murky dusk, a boxcar door swung wide. The hobo helped his pal on board to start on his last long ride. The lantern swung, the train bowled out, the engine at gathered speed. The engineer threw the throttle wide, locked to his fiery steed. 10 cars back in the empty box, the hobo rolled a pill. The flare of the match showed his partner's face, dark white and deathly still. As the train wheels clicked on the coupling joints, a song for the rambler's ear, the hobo talked to the still white form, his pal for many a year. It's a mighty long time we've rambled, Jack, with the luck of men who roam. Back doorsteps for a dining room and a boxcar for a home. We rambled out on the eastern route, the Tops and the Chesapeake. We rode the Leadville narrow gauge in the days of old Cripple Creek. We rambled out through Sunny Cal on the rails of the old SP, and of all you had through good and bad, well, a half belonged to me. You made me promise to you, pal, if I lived and you cashed in, to take you back to the old churchyard and bury you there with your kin. Well, you must have known that I'd keep my word, because you said I was all right. I'm keeping my promise to you, pal. I'm taking you home tonight. I didn't have no money to send you back. I'm taking you home on the fly. It's a decent way for a beau to go, home to the by and by. As the train rolled over its ribbons of steel straight through to the east it sped, the engineer in his high-capped seat kept his eyes on the rails ahead. 10 cars back in the empty box, the lonely hobo sighed. For the days of old, his pal so cold had taken his last long ride.
Oh, the last ride. That's the first hobo poem I ever learned there along the Nickel Plate Railroad. That was a performance quite a long time ago at Beloit College there in Wisconsin. I had a chance to do a program with them about tramp lore and philosophy. In the old days, my teachers tell me, my teachers are people who lived on the freight trains, who went to work on the freight trains, the booming crowd who worked in the timber and worked in the wheat harvest, the 110 cats. But they used the freight trains to get to work because there weren't any roads then, there weren't any cars. Well, back in their time, they said that the ticket on the freight trains was your red card, the red card in the industrial workers of the world, your wobbly card. You'd show that the conductor, well, he chances already belonged to one of the railroad brotherhoods and probably remembered back to the American Railway Union strike of Eugene Debs. And now, Debs was one of the founders of the industrial workers of the world. Well, they'd honor that red card. Besides, there were so many of you that there was no way to bag you all off of it. And even if they did, where are the harvesters going to come from? Where are the loggers going to come from? Where are they going to come from to work in the hard rock mines up in Butte? They got to boom in on the freight trains. Well, they told me when you're on the trains, like, say, the harvest stiffs, the D-horns, they were the tin horn gamblers. They knew when payday was. They knew when people had paid off on a job and were booming on to the next one, the crews. So they'd be in the boxcars with crooked dice or a crooked deck of cards, and they'd shake these guys down and fleece them. You understand? They were jack rollers. Well, the IWW had what were called D-horn crews. And they were people who could spot a crooked game, travel to three or four together. They'd see a guy dealing crooked. They would engage him in a game with a Missouri bankroll. It's a big roll of toilet paper and a couple of 20s wrapped around the outside. So it looked like he had a whole wad. It was real attractive to him. And once you caught him cheating, they'd throw down on him. They'd pick him up and throw him out the moving boxcar door. It was called greasing the rails. There was nobody else looking out for you. You pretty much had to look out for yourselves. Well, now here's a song about a strike on the Canadian Pacific, up in Canada, one of the great songs of Joe Hill.
Joe Hill was asked to write a song for those Southern Pacific Railroad workers. So he took a popular tune of the day and threw a new set of words at it and wrote a song about union scabbing. Then he wrote a little note to the industrial worker in which he said, "Union scabbing is as if you're about to be hung. And as you were led to the scaffold, the executioner turned to you and said, 'Gee, I hate to do this. But if it's any consolation, the scaffold was built by union carpenters. The rope was made by union rope makers, and here, sir, is my card.' That is union scabbing." Oh, the workers on the SP line, a strike sent out a call. But Casey Jones, the union scabby, wouldn't strike at all. His boilers, they was leaking, and his drivers on the bum, and the engine and the bearings, they was all out of plumb. But Casey Jones, he kept his junk pile running. Casey Jones, he was working double time. But Casey Jones, he got a wooden medal for being good and faithful to the SP line. And now the workers said to Casey, "Won't you help us win this strike?" He said, "You'd better go along, go on and take a hike." Then someone threw a bunch of railroad ties across the track, and Casey hit the bottom with an awful smack. But Casey Jones, he hit the river bottom. Casey Jones, he broke his bloomin' spine. But Casey Jones, he was an Angelino. I took a trip to heaven on the SP line. Now Casey got to heaven to the pearly gates. He said, "I'm Casey Jones, the guy that hauled the SP freight. You're just the man," said Peter, "our musicians went on strike. You can get a job of scabbing anytime you like." Yeah, Casey Jones, he got up into heaven. Casey Jones, he's doing mighty fine. But Casey Jones went to scabbing on the Angels like he done to workers on the SP line. And now the Angels got together, said it was not fair for Casey Jones to go around a scabbing everywhere. And Angels Local 23, they sure was there, and they promptly fired Casey down the golden stair. But Casey Jones, he went to hell a-flying. Casey Jones and the devil said, "Oh, fine." But Casey Jones, get busy shoveling sulfur. That's what you get for scabbing on the SP line.
Casey Jones, the union scab. Well, you know, that was my mistake. That concert took place in Canada, in Vancouver, when I was doing some strike relief for the telecommunications workers up there. and the concert's recorded. I got confused there. That the song that Joe wrote for that Canadian strike was called "Where the Fraser River Flows." This one was indeed for strike on the Southern Pacific. Well, let's go to Portland. Portland is one of my favorite towns in North America. There's a cafe there called Sisters of the Road, named for Boxcar Bertha, the book that she wrote about being a woman tramp back during the Depression years. Well, Sisters of the Road is a completely non-violent community in the middle of the Skid Road. I mean, people go in there, they get inexpensive food, or they can work out what they eat. But the minute they walk in, they know that whatever load of violence they're carrying, they can put it away for a while. They can put it down because nobody's going to challenge them. Nobody's going to provoke them. It's a wonderful, wonderful place. They sponsored a hobo parade for the people living on the street. One year, I was invited down there to be the grand marshal of that parade, so I put on a frayed old tuxedo and a battered top hat, and I had a cane and gloves with the fingers cut out. Went down there. We did a whale of a big parade, crossed over the Burnside Bridge, made the first bridgehead of the street people on the other side of the river. A place, a drop-in center, a men's center called Baloney Joe's. I remember breaking a bottle of Tokay on the wall there to start it on its checkered career. We went inside and did a little show, singing and poems. One of the singers there was the great Portland Gray, a prodigiously great tramp. I had the unfortunate duty, when we had run into each other in Minneapolis, of telling him that Fry Pan Jack, one of the great elders of the traveling nation, had passed away. So he had made up a wonderful song about Fry Pan Jack, and he started to sing it at that gathering at Baloney Joe's. Looked out, and there was an old man bent over, his shoulders heaving, crying. When he looked up, it was Fry Pan Jack. He was so moved at the song that Portland Gray was singing about him. Another person who stood up, did some poetry, was a street poet, a Native American street poet who lived in the doorways, lived in the alleys, lived on the wine. He did a few of his poems. One that I remember, a little short poem, "I see the promise of love in your eyes, and I don't know which one of us to feel sorry for." Here's a song about that. "I remember loving you."
I look at my brown suitcase, think of all the places that I've been. Railroad yards and prison guards, all the dumpy little towns along the stem. And the whispering of the people as they watch every move that I go through. I remember all these things, mostly I remember loving you. I remember loving you back when the world was new, and to think you loved me too. I remember loving you. The buckskin smells, so the people tell, as we huddled in the boxcar from the rain. Flashing lights that cut the night, the railroad bulls that pulled us off the train. When the winter's cold and the norther blows, I'm huddled in the corner till I'm blue. I remember all these things, mostly I remember loving you. I remember loving you back when the world was new, and I think you loved me too. I remember loving you. Winter streets where the frozen sleet comes soaking through the cardboard in my shoes. Where the promised land might be a place where a man could find free cigarettes and booze. And the alleyways full of ragged strays, the doorway wine I tell my troubles to. I remember all these things, mostly I remember loving you. I remember loving you back when the think you loved me too. I remember loving you. I remember loving you. Back when the world was new. And I think you loved me too. I remember loving you.
With your host, UUtah Phillips. You can hear Loafers Glory on such wonderful stations as KPFT in Houston, Texas, and KMUN in Astoria, Oregon, and we hope a station near you. We'll be back in just a moment with the second half of the show, but if you'd like to get a newsletter catalog from Loafers Glory, you can call us at 800-989-3825. That number again, 800-989-3825. Or you can write Utah Phillips at Box 1235, Nevada City, California, the zip code 95959. We'll be back in just a moment.
Kenny Hall. It still is Kenny Hall, and hopefully forever it will be Kenny Hall, playing that potbelly mandolin standing straight up on one knee, and he plays it with one giant fingernail on his right hand. I sure hope you have a chance to listen to Kenny and see him alive as a man full of light and full of joy. I think the first time I ever tried to finger pick a guitar, and I was a fair finger picker, I learned it the hard way since I have no aptitude in that direction. I thought of it when I was playing and singing I Remember Loving You there. Well, the first song I tried to finger pick was Railroad Bill. The woman who taught me to play the guitar that way was Lead Thumb Baker, Mrs. Etta Baker from North Carolina. Oh, she could finger pick a storm, and she taught me Railroad Bill and Bully of the Town and so many others. Railroad Bill, I found out some years later, was a real person. He was a black train robber. The real name of Morris Slater, and he worked for the L&N, the Louisville-Nashville Railroad, and he would raid boxcars and throw food and other goods off of the boxcars for people to gather up who were poor. Well, in 1897, it was a Constable J.S. McGowan shot Morris Slater in Atmore, Alabama. You know, they put Morris Slater on exhibit in Montgomery, Alabama, and 3,000 people saw him. At 50 cents a head. That's terrible. Morris Slater, Railroad Bill, was the black Robin Hood. Now, what I want you to hear is first, I want a little bit of Etta Baker playing Railroad Bill the way that I always wanted to play it. And then the best known version of, the most complete version of Railroad Bill with all the verses, the whole story, sung by Bill Morris of Mars Hill, North Carolina.
Thank you. Railroad Bill, he's a mighty bad man. Shot that lantern right out of that brakeman's hand. He's a bad man, oh, Railroad Bill. Railroad Bill, Railroad Bill. He never worked, Lord, and he never will. He's a bad man, that Railroad Bill. Now MacMillan had a special train. He went hunting, but it was all in vain. He was looking for Railroad Bill. Now MacMillan, he didn't know Railroad Bill packed a 44. He's a bad man on Railroad Bill. Kill me a chicken, save me the wing. People think I'm working, I ain't doing a doggone thing. Just ride, ride, ride. Gonna drink my whiskey, drink it in the wind. Doctor said it'd kill me, but he never said when. Gonna ride, ride, ride. Got shot two times and two times more. No more looking for Railroad Bill. Talk about your five and your $10 bill. Never was a bill like old Railroad Bill. Was a bad man, that Railroad Bill.
Railroad Bill. I love hearing Mrs. Etta Baker do that. Bill Morris from Mars Hill, North Carolina, knows a lot of good railroad songs and knows how to put them down, too. I got off of the trains, I mean after riding full time, as I've told you before, when I got back from Korea and was just generally pissed off at where I'd been, what I'd seen, what I'd done. And I fetched up in that Joe Hill house, one of the houses of hospitality of the Catholic workers, where, and I've talked about him so many times before, I met Ammon Hennessy. I believe it was in about his 70th year, who ran the Joe Hill house, an anarchist, a pacifist, a draft dodger, many, many different things. It was another one of those nonviolent communities. Of course, everybody in there, mostly alcoholics, Second World War vets with medical disabilities. The place was just a boiling with violence, which Ammon would handle. And he handled it all the time, and he handled it himself. Besides which, he pushed a grocery cart 60 blocks a day, at least, going into the produce sections of the grocery stores and supermarkets and getting rotted produce, stuff they didn't want to sell, getting unlabeled cans, cans where the labels had fallen off. You couldn't sell them because nobody knew what was in them. We didn't know what was in them either. Whatever it was, we crank them open and throw them into the stew pot, especially in the winter. See, that stew pot sat on the stove all winter long. And every time something new came in, no matter what it was, you threw it in there. So the stew evolved over the winter. There were sheep herders from up in Heber Valley would come down and winter in, winter after winter, and they got to know that down the bottom of that pot was the sediment, was all the sediment, and that there was a big long-handled fork on a leather thong hanging on a nail, and that those who knew would reach down into that pot and break through pieces of that caked-up stuff. Nobody ever knew what it was, but that was the best part of the whole stew. I remember speaking of produce to Catholic workers in Los Angeles. The big produce markets there where the trucks came in before daylight to pick up a day's produce. Some of it couldn't be sold. Some of it wasn't cosmetically pure. So the Catholic workers said, give it to us. We'll put it to work feeding the poor. They wouldn't do it. So those Catholic workers got together and they sat down in the dumpsters amid the garbage. They filled up the dumpsters with their human bodies and embarrassed them and finally forced them to put a little booth up at the end of the loading docks. And anything that couldn't be sold was trucked down there with hand trucks, and the Catholic workers came with their own truck and hauled it away to feed the poor. Direct action gets the good, folks, and don't you forget it. Ammon Hennessy was speaking one night, talked about people that he knew in his life, like Clarence Darrow, talked of Eugene Debs, whom he shook hands with when Debs was being led into Atlanta Penitentiary for the last time, and Hennessy had just been let out on a rap of a conscientious objection during the First World War. He talked one night about Lucy Parsons. Lucy Parsons ought to be a lot better known. She was the widow of Albert Parsons. They were both organizers. He was a black woman from Amarillo, Texas, and Waco, Texas, and her husband, Albert, was a Confederate lieutenant. Well, they couldn't live there after they got married, you know. I mean, she'd seen her kin lynched down there. They went to Chicago and became organizers. They were organizers for the first fight for the eight-hour day, 1886. A big rally in Haymarket Square, and a bomb was thrown, and people were killed, and the Haymarket martyrs, including Albert, were framed up on that, and they were executed. Well, his widow, Lucy, continued to organize and lived well into this century. One Friday night at our gathering at the Joe Hill House, Ammon Hennessy reminisced about Lucy Parsons. He said she was at a big, huge May Day rally in the Haymarket in Chicago, and Ammon, he said, was given the job of introducing her to the crowd. Well, she was in extremely advanced years. He helped her to the podium and described her as her hair snow white, tied back neatly into a bun, her face deeply incised with lines, deep-set, beady black eyes. She hunched hawk-like over that podium and fixed that multitude with those eyes. And she said in a high, reedy, barely audible voice, the image of everybody's great-great-grandmother, she said, "What I want is for every greasy, grimy tramp in the world to arm himself with a knife or a gun, and stationing himself at the doorways of the rich, shoot or stab them as they come out." Well, she was pissed. She was righteously pissed. Now, Ammon was a pacifist, like I say, and he didn't admire the sentiment, but he sure admired her spunk. It was after that late-night session. A bunch of tramps came in from the roper yards of the Denver Rio Grande and Western. They were half frozen. They were out of Chicago, headed south, like I say, trying to get to Southern California, but they had started late. And they picked up a cattle car somewhere, and the wind could blow through the slat sides. And that wind in Wyoming, it picks up the snow. It's not flakes, but little kernels of ice, and it lashes them against you. Take the skin off the side of your face. By the time they got down the canyon out of Evanston and found our place, they were half frozen to death. Well, we fed them, got them warm. One of them came up to us later on and said, you know, there's a fellow that came in with us, but he was too sick and couldn't make it up. Now, they could have told us the minute they came in, but no, they took care of themselves first. So Ammon and me and some others, we went down there and started cracking open boxcars, and we found him. Here's a song I made about that.
I was there when they opened the boxcar and found him stone dead on the floor. Though thumbing and bumming was all of our trade, no one had seen him before. He wore the face of a stranger, lost and unseen in a crowd. He He looked so small as we carried him down, wrapped in a newspaper shroud. The wind blows cold in Wyoming, the stars shine clear and bright. If you don't wake up tomorrow at all, I guess it's old buddy goodnight. His hair was the color of winter, all streaked with iron and coal, and all you could see in his soft prairie eyes was the wind and the grass and the snow. The backs of his hands were like road maps, the lines on his face were the same, and on his left arm a faded tattoo bordered a rose and a name. The wind blows cold in Wyoming, the stars shine clear and bright. If you don't wake up tomorrow at all, I guess it's old buddy goodnight. I don't know where he came from, his train was a UP freight. If there's someone waiting for him down below, he'll be a little bit late. So give him a line in your paper, and here's what I want you to say. There's some things worse than dying alone, one of them's living that way. The wind blows cold in Wyoming, the stars shine clear and bright. If you don't wake up tomorrow at all, I guess it's old buddy goodnight.
Old buddy goodnight, a true story. Well, Bodie Wagner lives up here on the San Juan Ridge now. I don't think that he tramps much anymore. He's married and got a child and settled, become a good Finnish carpenter. He's still one of the best songwriters around. Bodie used to come into Spokane when I was up there on the freight trains, come and hang out up at my place. There was a lot of tramping going on through that town. Some of the younger tramps would come by in season and help me to put in my garden or help me to wrap it up when the fall came. Like Lost John Cloud, he always did that for me. Well, Bodie called from the Trenton Havana Yards for the Great Northern, the Billy Goat, what he'd come in on. Said he'd meet me downtown at Kay's. Now, Kay's on West Main was a pie card joint, you know what I mean? Where, well, these old guys, you know, these people who were alcoholics who were down on their luck, who weren't able to do any kind of work anymore, maybe had a little bit of VA, maybe had a little bit of a pension, they could go to Kay, a Japanese woman, and give her a bunch of that money they had, and she would put their name on a card, a pie card, and hang it on a hook with their name on it behind the cash register. And then she would punch out whatever they ate. That meant for the rest of the month they'd always have something to eat. They could drink up or get rolled for the rest, but they always had something to eat. I don't know if there are any pie card places left around. Well, Bodie said he'd meet me down there at Kay's. Got there, she wouldn't let him in the door. I mean, this was not an uptown joke, a joint, but she wouldn't let him in the door. He was just too greasy. I mean, he had, in the one boxcar after another, I guess one of them had puddled water with iron filings in it, which had sluiced up against him, and another one had sawdust in it, another one probably wall board, which had plastered itself all over him. It was a disgusting, wretched mess. So we were turned away. Now somebody had left a little fluffy white dog tethered to the parking meter there, to the fastidious little brute, licking itself all over, keeping itself clean. Bodie looked down at it and said, boy, I wish I could do that. I said, don't you think you ought to pet it first? Let's listen to Bodie Wagner's great old song that he wrote for kids called Woolly Bum Man.
Been out on the road for 2 weeks straight. 3 days ago was the last I ate. My clothes was ragged and I was toothed. Whiskers reached down to my shoe. Out of the church comes a cute little miss. Turns to her ma and tugs on her dress. She said, Mama, look at the woolly bum bum. Mama, look at the woolly bum bum. Mama, look at the woolly bum bum. The woolly bum, woolly bum, woolly bum man.
So I was sitting on the sidewalk picking out a song, earning a little pocket change for too long. Here comes a boy walking with his dad, toppled the change cup that I had, laughed at my face and tripped on his toes, pointed his little finger right up at my nose. He said, "Pappy, look at the woolly bum bum. Pappy, look at the woolly bum bum. Pappy, look at the woolly bum bum. The woolly bum, woolly bum man." So I went to the woods to get some rest, closed my eyes and I done my best. But when I woke, the birds flew round, squirrels and muskrats staring me down, critters and creatures everywhere, and all they done was sing and stare. They sang, "Woolly bum bum, woolly bum bum, ah woo-hoo, the woolly bum bum, the woolly bum, woolly bum man." So I don't care if you think I'm weird, I don't mind, it's the way I was reared. I'm just happy as can be, singing my songs and blowing free. I like everyone you know, seems like everywhere I go. They say, "Looky, there goes the woolly bum bum. Looky, there goes the woolly bum bum. Looky, there goes the woolly bum bum. The woolly bum, woolly bum man."
Bodie Wagner, isn't that a charming song? He writes charming songs, that's a fact. I love the harmonica, too. Well, now, let's see. Kate Wolf and I were touring in the East, traveling together, and I wanted to take her to a place where I knew they would love her music, the old Cafe Lita in Saratoga Springs, New York, where I had developed an audience there, and I really wanted them to hear what Kate did. She sang a song that night about the death of Woody Guthrie, about his burial. Later on, a fellow who had roomed with Woody Guthrie in the early 50s came up backstage and said, "Kate, you know, Woody was never buried." And he was from, a fellow who was talking to us was from West Virginia, and he had that mellifluous accent, beautiful accent. He described how Arlo and Marge and put Woody's ashes in a coffee can, and they rowed out onto the water there in New York, and then the way that he said it, he strewed their ashes on the sea. Well, Kate looked at me, and I looked at her, as much as to say to each other, who wants it first? Ashes strewed on the sea. Well, the next day, when it come time to drive away, she gave me my pad and paper, said, "I'll drive today. You sit in the back, and you put that song together. You know, well, you rounders from the West, the mantle of Woody Guthrie falls upon your none too broad shoulders, and you've got to deal with it. It's no business of mine." She said, "By the way, you're going to write that song. You're going to sing it tonight when we get down to the town crier in Hopewell Junction, New York." Well, all right. I did write that song. I want you to hear it. Sung by, of all things, a sea captain running a coastwise packet up in Maine, the great Kendall Morris from South Paris, Maine. But before opening it, sliding into that, I wanted to put something of Woody Guthrie. So the old Library of Congress 1937 recording of Woody Guthrie, his guitar and harmonica, playing a little bit of the Lost Train Blues, and then Ashes on the Sea.
What is this tune I hear repeating? Sprung from the callous seed you've sown. Our songs will come and go like seasons, and bloom or fade all on their own. Now I know I will not find you. You're gone from that one who loves you has strewn your ashes on the sea. I stepped outside for just a moment to turn around and look on my own face. Who was that shadow just behind me? That old man I reach out to embrace. Now I know I will not find you. You're gone from all but memory. For I am told that one who loves you has strewn your ashes on the sea. Upon a picture, another still to read the pages through, perhaps to search along the wayside, hoping I might find a trace of you. Now I know I will not find you. You're gone from all but memory. For I am told that one who loves you has strewn your ashes on the sea. Your dust cloud still drifts across the footprints. Best friend still standing there alone. Boxcars still keep the lovers parted. The little boys still run away from home. Now I know I will not find you. You're gone from all but memory. For I am told that one who loves you has strewn your ashes on the sea. What is this tune you hear repeating? Sprung from the callous seeds I've sown. Our songs will come and go like seasons, and bloom or fade all on their own. Gone from all but memory. For I am told that one who loves you has strewn your ashes on the sea.
Thanks for taking this trip with us. You've been listening to Loafer's Glory, the Hobo Jungle of the Mind. See you again. America, Thomas Wolfe. It is the place of the fast approach, the hot, blind, smoky passage, the tragic, lonely beauty of New England, and the web of Boston, the place of the mighty station there, the engines passive as great cats, the straight, dense plumes of engine smoke, the acrid and exciting smell of trains and stations, and of the man swarm passing ever in its million-footed weft, the smell of the sea in harbors, and the thought of voyages, and the place of the goat cry, the strong joy of our youth, the magic city, when we knew the most fortunate life on earth would certainly be ours, and that we were 20 and could never die. And always, America is the place of the deathless and enraptured moments, the eye that looked, the mouth that smiled and vanished, and the word, the stone, the leaf, the door we never found and never have forgotten. And these are the things that we remember of America, for we have known all her thousand lights and weathers, and we walk the streets forever. We walk the streets of life alone.